The lectionary readings this week present several challenging lessons about leadership in the church. It's to our detriment that we tend to view these readings as if they're dealing only with ancient history. Last Sunday, for instance, we heard the familiar Gospel of the Good Shepherd, in which Jesus describes the ideal minister as a servant leader, someone who comes to serve, not to be served. In addition to nourishing, guiding, and encouraging the faithful, these servant leaders, emulating Jesus himself, should be ready to lay down their life, or at least to put aside the ideologies and prejudices which impede them from making decisions that enable the church to flourish. Moreover, the example of certain modern martyrs like Oscar Romero, Berta Cáceres, and Sister Dorothy Stang show us that, while not frequent, some servant leaders are even invited to the ultimate sacrifice of actually laying down their life. I think this week's readings urge us to consider how many of our church leaders today are truly focused on serving rather than being served. Today's first reading from the Acts of the Apostles briefly introduces us to two key leaders in the early church, Paul and Barnabas, who exhibit vastly different styles of leadership. Paul, of course, you already know. We read portions of his letters almost every day. In fact, it would be difficult to conceive of another person, other than Jesus himself, who has left a more enduring imprint on the church. The second person, Barnabas, is less familiar. In fact, it's possible that he's completely unknown to you. Nevertheless, he's one of the heroes of early Christianity. As we follow the exploits of Paul and Barnabas in the next several chapters of the book of Acts, we get to observe their actual leadership styles. A preliminary caution. We sometimes speak rather glibly about the gifts of the Holy Spirit conferred on us at baptism and confirmation. Nevertheless, as we consider the examples of Barnabas and Paul and attempt to extrapolate from them to current church leaders, it's important to remember that not all the gifts of the Spirit are given to every person, and certainly not to every person in the same degree. Let's consider Barnabas first. Although born in Cyprus, he traveled to Jerusalem as a young man to study. There, he became an ardent disciple of Jesus. During Jesus' lifetime, Barnabas emerged as a respected disciple, one of the 70 chosen by Jesus to go out as missionaries. Later, after Jesus' death, he became a prominent leader in the early church. Actually, Barnabas was a nickname. Joseph was his real name. The nickname was conferred on him to describe his leadership style. In Aramaic, Bar-Naba means son of consolation, or in today's parlance, the one who encourages others. Now there's an epithet for any leader to aspire to. Forget about titles like His Holiness or His Eminence. Let our leaders aim instead at being known as the one who encourages others. We met Barnabas back in chapter 4 of Acts, where St. Luke tells us that Barnabas had some property which he sold and then gave the money to the poor. Now there's a leader who literally puts his money where his mouth is. We next learn that, feeling a little overextended in his pastoral work, Barnabas encouraged one of his young relatives, John Mark, to enter ministry. Sometime later, Barnabas invited John Mark to join him on one of his missionary forays so that he might acquire some practical experience in leadership. You already know this young disciple, John Mark. He grew up to become the gospel writer, Saint Mark. As well as being an encourager, Barnabas seems to have had a knack for spotting talent. Barnabas was also significant in Saint Paul's evolution as an apostle. Paul first surfaced in chapter 7 of Acts, where he was identified as an agitator at the murder of Stephen, the first martyr. Later, Acts recounts that Paul, quote, breathed threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord. He went to the high priest and asked for authorization so that if he found any Christians, he might arrest them and bring them bound to Jerusalem, end quote. Well, we know that at a certain point, Paul had a dramatic encounter with Jesus, an encounter which changed his life radically. From ruthless persecutor, he became a passionate promoter of Christianity. Nevertheless, when he attempted to join the Jerusalem Christians, they wanted nothing to do with him. Their vivid memory of him as tormentor led them to mistrust his so-called conversion. Barnabas, however, sensing the influence of the Holy Spirit, spoke in favor of Paul and persuaded the community to take a risk on him. Barnabas, the consensus builder. When the apostles sent Barnabas to lead the embryonic community in Antioch, he invited Paul along to help, and for a while these two friends enjoyed a fruitful partnership. However, it didn't last long. Their different approaches to ministry, as well as their dissimilar leadership styles, led to sharp contention and an eventual falling out. Whereas Barnabas, the encourager, was an accommodator, Paul was decidedly less flexible. He seems to have had an overdeveloped sense of self-assurance. When he was convinced of the truth, he brooked no opposition, not even friendly opposition. Paul himself, in his letter to the Galatians, describes one of his more obstinate moments. He recounts that, "When Peter came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face, because until certain people came from Jerusalem, he used to eat non-kosher with the Gentiles. But after they came, he changed his practice out of fear for what they might think. And the other Jewish Christians joined Peter in this hypocrisy. Even Barnabas was led astray." Galatians chapter 2. Peter and Barnabas were not the only ones to suffer Paul's scorn. In his second letter to Timothy, Paul grumbles about five other partners in ministry who, one after the other, abandoned him. First, there was Barnabas's cousin John Mark, whom Paul considered silly and immature and sent him packing. There was also Demas, about whom Paul says, "He fell in love with the world." In other words, in Paul's estimation, he found the rigors of missionary life too difficult and thus forsook the gospel. Then there were Crescens and Titus. They didn't forsake the gospel. They just found Paul so overbearing that they chose to leave him to work in another ministry. Finally, there was Alexander the coppersmith, who, Paul complains, caused him and the church much grief. It's instructive, I think, in this last example, to see how Paul misidentifies the interests of the church with his own interests. And let's face it, he wasn't the last church leader to make that mistake. Clearly, Paul was not the easiest man to get along with. My intention in this reflection is not to denigrate Paul's inexhaustible missionary efforts and his indisputable legacy to Christian theology and spirituality. I don't think it's possible to overestimate his importance to the church. Nevertheless, I find his leadership style to be dispiriting. In contrast, I find the somewhat forgotten ministry of Barnabas, though less consequential in the long run, to be more appealing. It's certainly closer to Pope Francis's description of church ministry as healing the wounds and warming the hearts of the faithful. I pray that I might become, and other servants of the gospel might become, more like Barnabas, more prone to encourage, to heal wounds, and to warm hearts. I even wonder if St. Paul, from his lofty throne in heaven, might not join with me in that prayer. May God bless you and give you health.